Do you want to find solutions that help teams make better decisions, solve problems faster, and free their creative minds to come up with smarter solutions? There's a workshop for that. Bonjour, I'm Nati Ravez, and I'm delighted to welcome to this show facilitators and experts who share their knowledge and experience of everything you need to know in the world of facilitation, giving you tips and tools for leading groups, sparking collaboration, and driving innovation. Thank you for tuning in, and let's go.
Hey, hey, everyone. Welcome to this new episode of There's a Workshop for That. I'm very excited to introduce someone I've been following on LinkedIn since a while. We were already in contact 2 years ago, and I've seen him grow impressively on this journey. He's passionate about a topic that absolutely essential for us facilitators, team managers, or leaders, how to connect and engage people. Our guest today is Jan Keck. He's a trainer, facilitator, and experience designer. He's driven by a simple belief: real deep connection beats small talk every single time. There's nothing that breaks his heart more than witnessing individuals trapped in awkward icebreakers, feeling more isolated despite being in a group. So Jan has dedicated his work to helping countless individuals build trust and foster meaningful connections with a global impact, as we will talk about later. From his conversation starter Cortex to his upcoming book, Ice Melters, and the resulting masterclass, which will come very soon, Jan's work is truly inspiring, and I'm super happy to say hello, Jan.
Hello, Nati. I'm really, really excited about our conversation today. And as you said in the beginning, I don't think we're going to do small talk for very long, if at all.
No. Yeah, if at all. We never actually. We always had a little bit of introduction at the beginning, but we fall into deeper connections and deeper conversation each time we talk to each other, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I would like to start really nice from the beginning and learn more from who you are and learn more about your background and how you came into facilitation.
I was reflecting on that actually just this morning, because I tried to figure out, is there a path that I would recommend people follow if they want to become a facilitator? And I have not yet met a person that had a straight path. Everybody had like twists and turns, and then they ended up facilitating at one point. And when I look back at it, I think the earliest time that I was doing something that a facilitator does was at summer camp when I was a camp counselor. And to me, this still was one of the most impactful times in my life, because I was very young when I became a counselor. I was 14, 15 years old, and already I had to lead a group of kids, which I would argue is maybe one of the hardest groups to lead. Working with adults now is, I think, a lot easier than a bunch of, I don't know, preteen kids. But the one thing that everything that I've done since then, I've worked in video production for over 10 years, then started hosting workshops, events, facilitating trainings. Everything that I approach has a similar structure to it. And I just love creating the experience for the participants from the moment they get an invitation, from the moment they enter a room, to the transformations and the aha moments that happen once we're together.
And how did you connect in that time, the young teenies, to each other?
I think at that point, because I was always co-facilitating or co-leading a group, nobody was really a counselor by themselves. There was always somebody who was more experienced, that already had all the tricks, who already had all of the activities planned. Looking back now, I know that we did a lot of cringe-worthy icebreaker activities that probably were not the best for the group. But you learn, right? Mm-hmm. I think when you first start out, you just follow what everybody else does or what everybody tells you to do. Like, pick an activity from this book of icebreaker activities and just help people get to know each other's names as like the first step.
Yeah. This leads to my second question, which will not surprise you, and you will immediately know where it comes from. What happens to you when you're here in a workshop now with adults? Let's start with a icebreaker.
Yeah, when somebody says that and I'm a participant, I'm already like, now I just watch what happens in the room, and it's like everybody starts to like get a little bit smaller, except maybe a few people that get really excited. But most people have this adverse reaction when they just hear the word icebreaker, and I have my own kind of love-hate relationship with that word and just the activities in themselves, because on one hand, I, as you mentioned in the intro, I don't like small talk. And if there's an activity that can help it to skip the small talk and really get to know somebody really quickly, I'm all for it. And I love doing improv and games with the right group. I think I'm in love with icebreakers. But then on the other hand, if it's a group that I don't feel safe yet, or people that I don't know being the center of attention, that used to be my worst nightmare. Like, I often introduce myself as a recovering shy guy. I hated being the center of attention and having to speak in front of a group. And most icebreakers make you do something silly that makes it even worse. So I totally get how people don't like icebreakers, and it makes them cringe and leads to these awkward moments. So I've been kind of trying to rediscover, okay, what makes icebreakers really work, or these activities, how can we change them so people don't feel left out, they don't feel they're being put on the spot. And that's been taking over my life in the last 2 years, doing research, trying out different things, running experiments.
Yes, and we are moving you and I in this facilitator's bubble, where you get a lot of advice how to design and facilitate a workshop. And in our last conversation, you and me, you talked about this, that let's like a checklist, a facilitator check the box. Okay, I've done my icebreaker, next. And actually, it is not about following strict a recipe. It's really about asking you the question, how can I connect and invite the people to connect to each other and engage? So what does it take to build trust quickly in a workshop or in a meeting full of strangers? How does it take to deepen the connection while working with a group? What do you think?
I think you mentioned two words that already describe a bit of the problem that exists with icebreakers. You mentioned, how can we build trust quickly? And I think that's what most people expect. That's why it's become this checkbox item at the beginning of the session. You have to do an icebreaker before you get into the content. If people do that, I think it's a great start. But if you stop right there, then that's a big problem, because trust does not get built fast. It takes time. And just doing one activity and expecting that's all that we need to break down barriers and help make it easier for people to connect with each other, and then afterwards they're best friends, they're like deeply connected teams, that does not work. So when I think about moving away from icebreakers, which to me, just the term, I'm always imagining the facilitator taking a big sledgehammer and trying to hit on the group that is frozen in ice, and in the process people get hurt, and like, it's not a pleasant, it's very violent, like, visual. I started moving to, okay, what about if we melt the ice instead, which takes more time. It's more gradual. Mm-hmm. It's also more comfortable for everyone, because some people might be frozen a little bit more. Other people might be frozen just a little bit, but melting the ice will just make sure that we all end up at the same level as much as possible. So to me, that whole process of melting the ice is not just one activity. It's a lot of smaller things that start with setting the right expectations before people even show up, so they're not surprised. And then layering and sequencing the different activities so they make sense. So we have like a little bit risk at the beginning, but then we increase the risk and we increase the vulnerability that we ask from participants as the time goes on.
So your advice is really to think maybe of first activity that bring people to have a first touch in the connection with others, but not too much bringing them on the spot, like they are scary about saying something wrong maybe. And this first activity is only a touch point, and then deepen the connection during the workshops means not forgetting to include some moment where people can connect to each other, right?
Yeah, to me, again, it's something that is like the foundation, but also it weaves itself throughout the whole session. So it's not just the thing at the beginning, it's kind of underlying. I'm always looking for moments where I might be able to do a breakout room activity or a small group discussion that helps people connect with each other, that strengthens the bonds that already exist. And the more I build that into the session, the more I can then have people have the difficult conversations at the end. I very often compare it to building a campfire, and that's kind of my whole methodology that I'm writing about in my book as well. To melt the ice, we have to build a campfire. And if we try to light a big log on fire, and I have a big log here right now, if I held a lighter underneath this, nothing would happen. It would not catch fire. It's just too big. So ideally, I'll start with my tinder or paper, something that burns really easily and quickly. So that's the very first activity should be something that has very low risk. Everybody can contribute, everybody can participate. And then once they do that, they become more confident and we can kind of go the next layer deeper. In the campfire analogy, this would be putting the little sticks or the kindling on top of the fire. And once that is going, then I can put the big log at the end. And that really is the goal. Like, what is the most uncomfortable thing or the activity or question that might require participants to step the furthest outside of their comfort zone that I want to get to? And everything should be leading up to that. Because the other challenge that I often see with people doing icebreakers is it's completely irrelevant and random to the topic of the session, right? So we might have a session around, a leadership training, let's put it that way. But then we do this icebreaker that does not have any connection to leadership, or it's just something silly, a silly game that you play. I would argue with a lot of activities, you can come up with the connection if you think about it ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Or you can pick a better activity that more aligns with the topic. And then nobody will also say, hey, this feels random. Why are we doing this? This is a waste of time. If it's aligned with it, then they really can't argue with it.
Another way of melting the ice is sometimes also starting to connect the people before they come in a workshop.
I mean, if you want to make the most of the time that you have together, then why not start the moment people sign up for something, the moment they get the invitation.
You and I spoke last week and I was asking for advice how to melt the ice for the participant of the Takeoff Bootcamp who never met before, but we really, really want to connect these people on their path to freelance facilitator. And we create a WhatsApp group. We invited them to come to the WhatsApp group, and we started a little bit of conversation in the WhatsApp group with little polls and asking for their favorite songs or asking for their excitement to come to the event. And I really felt in this group, I was not expecting that they would be so active in this group. So it was very, very nice, so that when they came into the first workshop, they actually knew a little bit of one another, and then we could continue to work with them. So like one of the first questions we asked was in the workshop was what is your favorite thing about facilitation, for example. And later on, I took your advice to continue to connect them later on. We send them in breakout rooms, and we pairs, also just two people, and they could talk freely for 5 minutes each. But the person who was listening had a bingo grid with a lot of adjectives, and he could put some dots on these grids. And back in the main room, one person was presenting the other person based on the adjective he selected. So it was really powerful because it was not only one person presenting. In 1.5 minute, they talk so much about the other person. And the other person, we ask also the other person, what did you feel in this 1.5 minute presentation, introduction about you? And each of them were very touched. So we had really a connection where we could, a good foundation to continue then to work on activities on this thing. So thank you for your advice. Just wanted to share how we turn it into the workshop.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that back. I think you followed that structure really well, because if I think about answering a poll, it's very low risk. Like, I just have to click an option. I don't have to do much more. And then answering the question, what do I love about facilitation? I know we talked about this too. I think the first invitation you have for people to answer, if that is something positive, it sets the tone, right? Like, we could also ask a more difficult question, or a question, if I think about what most small talk topics are, very often they're quite negative, although they're easy to talk about, but it's like, we even did a little bit of that when, before we started recording, we talk about the weather and like, oh, it's raining, oh, it's too hot, or oh, there's so much traffic of getting here, right? It's like, yes, we connect on some level, but it's a very different flavor of connection than if we said, hey, what has been the most exciting part of your day so far? Or what do you love about facilitation, right? Immediately people light up, they get passionate, and that energy really carries itself forward. And then for the breakout room activity, that's probably the thing that takes the most courage to like share something with another person and actually unmute, right? And maybe after that, it would be unmuting in front of the whole group and sharing something in front of like a larger group. All of these steps take the, like, invite people to take a small increased risk.
Are you ready to ride the freelance wave as a facilitator? Join us for the second cohort of the Takeoff Bootcamp, kicking off in fall 2024. If you're feeling lost in the fog, unsure of where to start or how to make your facilitation services shine and attract clients, we are here to guide you out of that haze. Sounds interesting? Find the link to join our waitlist for the fall 2024 cohort in the show notes. Jan, I told you in our last conversation about your impact internationally. And I would like to share a little story. I was in Singapore a few weeks ago. And after a conversation with Kirsty Lewis, she told me to get in connection with Lisa Partridge, which is a facilitator in Singapore. And we connect and we say, okay, we will have a coffee there. So I came in this little coffee in Singapore, meeting her, who was very nice. And then it was after, I don't know, 10 minutes, she told me, hey, Nati, I have a card deck from a super amazing guy, and I love these card decks. And it was you. She was talking about Jan Keck, and we took one of the brave cards. I think we were very brave and deepened the conversation so quick. It was so, so nice. And I was really, I had a big smile on my face because I told you, oh, I know Jan. I already talked to him, and he should come to Singapore. So tell me more about this card deck, because I don't want to tell it myself. You are the best to talk about these card decks.
If we go back to my kind of journey into facilitation, before I even called myself a facilitator, I used to work in video production for like over 10 years. I had different companies, mm-hmm. and all the work that I created was digital. Like you can't really touch a video that you create and send to a client and then they put it on YouTube or their website. So it was very intangible that way. And at the same time, I used to live in Canada, and I was in Canada for, I think, 6-7 years when I attended this weekend retreat. And I would still compare my life as before that weekend retreat and after. It's now about 10 years ago, and we're actually planning a reunion in January of that retreat and invite all the people from 10 years ago and see what has happened since then, because it was a goal-setting retreat for like personal development, right? So we would score ourselves in different categories of our lives, like relationship and career and lifestyle and all of these things, and then set goals of what do we want to change in the next year? How do we want to grow as a person? And it was that retreat that I, for the first time, was with a group of strangers, and we went deep so quickly because we answered these vulnerable questions and we shared things that we've never shared with anyone before. And we had just the whole weekend was so impactful that I left and I was like, wow, I think as cheesy as it sounds, I just made 30 new friends in a weekend. And I want more of that. Like, why? This is exactly what has been missing in my life. Because until that time, it was not really obvious that most of my conversations, most of the events I go to are like networking events where you do small talk, you collect business cards. But how many people could I actually call a good friend? Like, who could I call in the middle of the night because I had something bad happen to me and they would show up at my house with a bottle of wine and we could just talk about it. And I realized I don't have a lot of people like that. And my idea was, okay, at that retreat, we were outside of the city. There was no internet connection, so we couldn't be on our phones. We couldn't be distracted. That was like one really important thing. And the other thing was that we had these deep conversations. So I organized a camping trip, invited a bunch of people, printed a deck of cards because it was too vulnerable for me to be the person who's bringing up all of these conversation topics. I didn't want to be the one who's to blame because I asked a question that makes people uncomfortable. So I printed them on cards, worked way better. Plus, because we were driving up with two cars, I could hand a deck to each car and let them basically self-facilitate these conversations and get to know each other. And it just became the most beautiful experience. It recreated exactly what I was hoping, where the conversation started in the car, but then we also went canoeing and we were sitting around the campfire under the stars talking about really challenging things in our lives, but with this supportive energy. Like, we got really close. I still would say that some of those people on that from that original retreat and also from that camping weekend are some of my closest friends today.
Oh, it's so nice. How does it feel, I mean, really personally and emotionally to make an impact with these cards? When I tell you about my meetup with Lisa from Singapore, I mean, it means to me, I translate, it means to me that you make an impact with these cards, you create deep conversation from which you even not know. So you are connecting people around the world because of your ID. How does it feel?
There's days where I can't believe that, like, one card deck that somebody might have purchased 5 years ago is getting, like, even what Lisa is doing, she's using the cards like almost every week at a weekly meetup. I had no idea until she posted about it on Instagram or LinkedIn and tagged me. And there's so many more people that probably use the cards, even if they just pick one question, have one really deep conversation with, let's say, a family member that they're reconnecting with. It doesn't even have to be with strangers or in a workshop, right? So it's on one way unbelievable, but on the other hand, that's exactly the, like, aligned with my mission. I would love to have a much bigger impact than I could have if I just asked great questions and kept the questions to myself.
Yeah.
I can only impact so many people. But if the cards go out there, or even like with the things that I train people on now, if they apply what they're learning and they work with a group, that impact just, it snowballs, right? It gets bigger and bigger, and then somebody else will answer a question because of the cards, and then they're like, "Ooh, I'm going to ask this question to the next person," and it just keeps going. I think that's what really keeps me motivated.
It's really, really nice. And I told you I have my birthday in 2 weeks from now. I will be back in Europe. And for this special birthday, because this is a round birthday, there will be a bigger group from people who don't know each other. Means also from France and from Germany, completely different kind of personalities, colleagues from corporates, musician, because I've been playing in a band.
Mm-hmm.
So I will use these cards. I will use these cards to connect them with each other. And I will tell you the results.
Yeah. And the one actually lesson that might also be relevant for anybody who's listening, who's thinking of work or who works with groups and thinking of applying some of the ideas that I shared. The very first deck of cards was just called Deep Questions. And it was just, I think, 50 questions that I collected from books, podcasts, or conversations that I had that I wanted to recreate. And I had one question in there that asked, "Have you ever cheated?" And unfortunately, that was one of the first cards one person picked up on that camping trip. And you could see how it made them really uncomfortable reading the question. And maybe they even felt a little bit of group pressure that they had to answer that question in that moment. Mm-hmm. And we didn't, like, nobody knew what the question was yet. We just saw them being uncomfortable. So when they started reading the question, suddenly everybody else got really uncomfortable, including me. Like, I probably was the most uncomfortable in that moment, because I'm like, oh, now this, what I try to avoid, has happened. I made somebody really uncomfortable with a question. But to my surprise, they actually went to share something really deep and vulnerable about that question. And it turned into a beautiful moment where the whole group was supporting them. But afterwards, I realized, okay, this is not what I want other people to feel. And I took that question out, but I did something else. I reordered the questions and I created three different categories. That's why you earlier said you answered the brave question. So there's curious questions, which are just below the surface. Then there's brave questions, which invite you to share something a little bit more personal, a little deeper. And then vulnerable questions, which are the deepest level. And I often say these are things you might not have ever shared with anyone or even thought about. One of the questions, for example, is, in what way do you feel incomplete? Or if you were to die today, what would you most regret? Right? Those are things that you should not start a conversation with. Like, they're great to get to at one point, but definitely not at the very beginning. So if you plan to use the cards, I encourage you to have everyone answer a curious question first. If they feel ready, then go to the next level. And if they feel ready, then go to the deepest one. And if they never get there, that's totally fine. Because compared to other, like, card games out there, there's no winning by answering the most questions. Winning is talking about something meaningful that you would not have had the courage to bring up without the card.
Yeah, absolutely. I love this. I love this. And I would love to continue with one of your next project, because you are now writing the books since, I think you've been working on it since a while. And I love the fact that you are always asking for feedback, asking groups. I've written one chapter, who would like to give their feedback to it. I think it's very clever to do that and to see if what you are doing fits what people could need. So can you tell me more about this book called Ice Melters? What can we expect by reading this?
So I'm taking this idea of building a campfire and applying it to how do you design an experience for a group to get them to the point where they can have these deep, meaningful conversations, where they can do something uncomfortable together. So it's about building trust and engagement and connections by not just starting at the start of the session, but even before that. Like, how do you set the right expectations? How do you basically gather the right materials to start a fire so you're ready once people are in the room to ignite that spark? I've realized it's becoming a way bigger project than I originally expected, because almost all of the knowledge that I've gathered about facilitating connections is going to be in that book. And I really want somebody to read this book who is maybe facilitating early in their career, and they're like, oh, I'm supposed to do an icebreaker, but it feels inauthentic. Like, maybe they are a person that also doesn't like being put on the spot and doesn't like doing icebreakers. Or it's someone who actually cares about including everyone. Because I actually, like, I'm a big introvert myself, so I'm at one point was thinking, should I be writing this book for introverted facilitators? But I realized, no, I'm actually writing it for the introverted and maybe the more shy and reserved participants. But everybody who's facilitating will have somebody like that in their group, because for them, it's going to be the hardest.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody's extroverted and they're very open, they're going to have an easy time with most icebreaker activities. But for this quiet people group, for them, it's going to be the most challenging. And I had a few people who were like, I'm a really extroverted facilitator. I need to read this book. I need your content, because I don't want anybody to feel excluded. And I want, like, if a group builds trust and connection at the same speed, like if we're all building the same campfire, rather than one person like, I'm done, I built my campfire, and another person is still looking for the right wood, then they're also not going to connect. So it has to happen with everyone, with extroverted people, with introverted people, with the quiet people, with the loud people. Everybody needs to be part of this.
And when will this book appear?
That's a very good question, as this is my first book.
Put pressure on
it
you.
It is my first book, and it's also, I've never thought that I would ever be writing a book until a little bit over a year ago when I started. And currently I'm sending out an email with content from the book every Monday. I've been consistent for over a year, which also I've never done before. But this really helped me make progress. So I'm always making progress every week. And at the moment, I want to say I know all of the content that is going to be in the book, but I haven't tested it yet. Like you were saying, I'm like looking for better readers. I'm looking for people to read what I've written so far. Right now, there's three, probably by the time this podcast comes out, four chapters of the six or seven that that I'm going to write. And once I have all the chapters written and get some good feedback, that's when I will set the date. So currently, I would say probably at one point in 2025, in the spring, is kind of the ideal target date. Unless something happens and the feedback is not what I expected, then I might have to rework some of the content.
If you need my feedback, I would be more than happy to share and to help.
Yeah.
And I also I think about one or two people who are exactly what you are saying, more introvert people, or even person with a neurodiverse personality, who might be very interested to have a look. So just sharing. And because it's not, because you have more project to come up, I know also that you are planning to open, and there is a waiting list for this. a course resulting from this book, from all your knowledge about this. Can you tell me more? A course or a masterclass? I don't know how you call it. Can you tell me more about
that? Yeah, so because I never thought I'd be writing a book, and I also realized a book might not be the best way to teach something that is about like team dynamics or group dynamics, right? Some of the things you almost have to experience or are better learned by watching something than just reading it. I'm building the course that is the equivalent of the book, but in a more interactive format. And I'm actually almost I'm about 4 chapters in of creating the content, and my goal is to finish that in the next couple of weeks so people can join before the book is out. Because the fun thing that happens is I put out some content for the course, I get feedback, it will influence the book. I put out a chapter of the book, mm-hmm. I get feedback on that, it will influence, like right now it's just kind of influencing or inspiring me in both directions to just make the content better and more applicable, have better examples. And I hope that also with the people who take the course, I might have some great case studies that I can include in the book. Like maybe even what you shared earlier, like you've applied some things in your session, and these were the results that you got. Because going back to the idea of the snowball and the impact, I feel I'm having the biggest impact if somebody doesn't give me a great testimonial about attending a training with me, but about them applying something in their session and their participants sending them a testimonial. And every once in a mm-hmm. while, somebody will send me, hey, this is the feedback I got from the session after I applied all the things that I've learned. That to me is the best part. So if anybody's listening to this and applying something, please let me know.
Nice. Thank you very, very much, Jan, for all these valuable insights, all these great conversations. It was really a pleasure to have you here, and I can't wait to read the book, continue to see you on LinkedIn, because you share really a lot of things on LinkedIn. And thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye and have a great day. And we speak very soon, I hope. Bye, Jan.
Bye.
I hope you took away valuable insights from this episode on the importance of creating an environment where people can truly connect and engage during your sessions. All the information about our guest, Jan Keck, can be found in the show notes. And if I have one recommendation, it's to subscribe to his newsletter, where Jan shares numerous valuable tips on making your workshops more engaging. So what's coming next on the podcast? I'm very thrilled to announce that we have two fantastic experts lined up for the next episodes. First up, we'll have Kirsty Lewis, the founder of the School of Facilitation. Together, we'll dive into the topic of setting prices confidently for our services as facilitators. If you run a facilitation business or you are a freelance facilitator, this might be interesting for you. Then we'll welcome Alex Eisenstetter, the creator of Storms and Gen AI expert. We'll discuss how to lead large-scale workshops effectively. And I'd really love for you to be part of the conversation. So if you want to be my co-moderator, you can send me your questions in an MP3 or in a text by email at podcast@laworkshoppers.com. And one last thing before I leave, since it's summer and many of my corporate clients are off for the next weeks, I'm opening several seats for mentoring in August. Whether you need support designing your next workshop or guidance on your path as a freelance facilitator, book a 20-minute call so we can talk about it. Until then, I wish you good health, success, and lots of happiness. Au revoir.